With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
And welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm your host, Sam Sorbo, here on Mojo50.com and also podcast wherever fine podcasts are hosted. Listen, I've got amazing video, audio, I should say, because this is radio, to share with you about somebody who lives right in Chaz, and he's decided to speak out, and it's fascinating to hear firsthand perspective from somebody who is actually living it. We're also going to talk about some other Twitter audio that's coming out. The recent shooting in Atlanta and plenty more, including it seems like there is a disparity in the effects of COVID on different races. And so to talk about that and much more, I'm bringing in my guest, Steve Malloy. He was part of the Trump EPA transition team. He's also the publisher of junkscience.com. Welcome to the program. Dang it. There you go. Sorry. All right. Are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
I had to push a little button and Yeah, I didn't do it correctly. Sometimes it doesn't work properly. So here's the thing. Actually, we have a couple things to talk about. First of all, there are reports that COVID seems to be more hazardous to minorities than to whites. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, right now it seems that like Hispanics and blacks have much higher death rates than whites for COVID. You know, it's preliminary data. We've got to wait till, you know, next year, see how everything shakes out. It's possible that I doubt that, you know, blacks and Hispanics are more sort of, you know, genetically susceptible. I mean, if those numbers are real, they're probably more economic and, you know, social. Poorer people tend to have worse health outcomes. We'll just have to see. You know, it's hard to tell. So many of the COVID statistics have been phonied up.
Have been what?
Have phonied up, right? I mean, they classify non-COVID deaths as COVID. You know, a lot of people die from something else, but they may test positive for COVID. So
we've incentivized them. COVID deaths. It's a lot of money in COVID right now.
Right. We've incentivized them. So we're just going to have to see. I know that this is all very, you know, this is a great time to make these political points. And this new report, I think that you referred to, came out of Brookings Institute, which is a left-leaning, you know, quote-unquote think tank. So we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, there do seem to be higher death rates among minorities. The reasons, though, are unclear. So
well, there are higher death rates among octogenarians. Do you think that COVID is also ageist as well as racist?
Well, I think that the I think what I saw yesterday, the other day, was 80% of COVID deaths occur in people over 65, and the median age is 80. So,
right. So it's ageist. Yeah. It goes after and also there are also the points where you know, if you suffer from comorbidities, other things that compromise your immunoresponse, you're going to struggle more.
Right, and minorities tend to have higher rates of comorbidities as well. So, and that is, of course, a socioeconomic thing. So we're just going to have to see how this all shakes out. But everyone's trying to surf, you know, poor George Floyd. So it's really sad.
Surfing George Floyd. That's an amazing sort of phrasing. I haven't heard that before.
Well, everyone's doing it. I mean, you see all these, you know, environmental racism now is all the rage.
Right.
And they're just trying to take advantage of George Floyd. And what happened to him was a tragedy, but these people want to surf it. You know, they want to exploit it for their own political agenda.
Right. So there are new claims of environmental racism as well. Injustice. There was a congressional hearing last week and a Harvard study talking about PM2.5 air pollution to increased COVID-19 deaths.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So PM2.5 is really just very fine soot and dust in the air. Some of it comes from tailpipes and smokestacks. A lot of it is just, you know, dust from could be dry conditions or it could be pollen. Just, you know, it's just stuff in the air.
Can you please really explain to me? I struggle with this. It's PM 2.5. Why is it called PM 2.5?
Well, the PM stands for particulate matter.
Okay.
And the 2.5 stands for
the size.
It's 2.5 millionths of a meter in diameter.
Right.
It's very small, like the thickness, you know, like 1/20th the thickness of a hair.
Now,
very small particles.
Now, will a mask prevent that?
Will a mask prevent that? That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, because I know that the masks, you know,
it doesn't matter. People inhale 2.5 all the time. It doesn't hurt anybody. The Clinton administration invented the notion that PM 2.5 kills people. I mean, they literally invented it out of whole cloth.
Well, Al Gore invented the notion that carbon dioxide was poison.
So this is a myth that the Obama administration exploited to destroy the coal industry. And that the Trump administration has reversed all these policies and said this is all junk science, we're not going to use it. And so in the spring when COVID started, you know, these Harvard researchers who were behind the PM junk science to start with came out with a study saying that, PM, you know, makes COVID even more dangerous. I think if you're exposed to higher levels of PM, your chance of dying from COVID is 15% higher. It's total junk science, but it has been embraced, you know, it's embraced by the left. It's just now one of the things they believe in.
Let's just break it down just a little bit. Well, no, I'm, but here's the thing. There is in every joke, there is a little bit of truth or whatever. If you breathe in a whole bunch of dust, it will hurt your lungs, right?
Well, it depends on what you mean. I mean, if you breathe in a whole bunch of dust, I mean, a lot of dust, but no one breathes in a whole lot of dust.
Right. That's the tipping point, right? Or the linchpin is they're claiming it's like CO2. It's like CO2's poison. Well, yeah, if all you're breathing is CO2, you will die because you do need oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a question of dose. And no one inhales so much PM 2.5 that they die. I mean, I can't even imagine what that exposure would be like.
It'd be a lot.
Right. I mean, to kill, you know, for a smoker to die from smoking, to get lung cancer, I mean, you've got to smoke packs and packs of cigarettes for decades. Okay. So that's
right.
You know, and if you were to compare the PM in smoking versus the PM in outdoor air, I mean, you're talking about, orders of magnitude, you know, thousands of times more in smoking than outdoor air.
Well, I mean, I remember when my house almost burned down and my neighbor's house burned down and there was so much smoke, you could see ashes flying through the air. You drove through it and then luckily, you know, we survived, but I could imagine if you were exposed to that day after day, you know, that would be pretty heavy. But that's not what we're talking about here.
Right. No, nobody is.
Right.
And the left has gotten so crazy about PM 2.5. They have actually tried to publish studies, and they have published studies claiming that outdoor air is more dangerous than smoking, more deadly than smoking. I mean, no, it's really, you can't make it up.
What?
It's true.
But that's
junk science, I will show you the study.
What is their interest in us not leaving our homes? Like, I just feel like I turn, it's like, please don't leave your homes. Why? What are you doing that you don't want me to see?
I like to say, you know, climate, for example, is not about controlling the weather. It's about controlling you.
Right.
And, you know, in this instance now, between COVID and, you know, George Floyd, it's all about defeating Donald Trump. Right, it's all about the power. It's not about anything else. It's not about racial justice. It's not about public health. It's about defeating Donald Trump, and that's what everything is about right now.
Yeah, it's all about power, isn't it? Okay, so what we're talking about, claims of environmental justice and environmental racism, and you say that those claims really only manage to remove job opportunities from minority communities. Where does that come from?
Well, yeah,
from?
so Right. So environmentalists like to say that, oh, minority communities, you know, they're exposed to higher levels of pollution. And, you know, just sort of go with this idea that, I guess, minorities live in cities and cities are more polluted than, say, rural areas. And therefore, minorities are more at risk. And, you know, we should, it's awful. And so, and what they try to do then is, if there are, you know, existing, like, industrial facilities, they try to kick them out of cities or not build new ones. And all that does is take away job opportunities from minority communities. It doesn't improve their health because the small amount of PM that is coming out of whatever smokestacks is not hurting anybody. Okay? It just doesn't hurt anybody. PM is completely innocuous. It doesn't cause asthma. It doesn't kill anybody. And so when you deny these people their you know, livelihoods, you're actually hurting them and you're hurting their health.
Right. Right. In fact, to sort of bring this a little bit full circle with COVID, when our response was, hey, let's shut down the economy, you know, I've been asking since the beginning, at what cost? Like, I get it. You know, I get it. Is it good to breathe dust? No. But if breathing dust that your body can actually, what's the word?
Well, it's harmless. It's
right.
Harmless.
That your body can endure without great harm, right? Is in competition with the risk of not having money to buy food. I think money to buy food should outweigh the negligible risk of the extra dust. I mean, I worked in the Philippines, and if you go into Manila, which is part, I worked in Manila, when we were driving to set, you would see people everywhere holding little cloths up to their faces because the pollution in Manila was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, especially for, you know, an American chick who was over there. I was like, this is amazing. And they're like, yeah, you want one of these cloths. Just hold it over your nose and your mouth.
Yeah.
In that instance, I did it. I refused to wear a mask. I just look at the mask. I'm sorry. I really struggle with the masks. They just look like muzzles to me. And I've discovered that I actually have mask anxiety. What?
Puzzles. That's funny.
Why?
Yeah, so, you raised two interesting points there. First of all, let's get back to, you know, pollution versus having a job. you know, people that have the dirtiest jobs, exposed to the most particulate matter, like diesel workers and coal miners are exposed to huge. You know, a non-smoking coal miner has a longer life expectancy than the average worker. Okay, so like a coal miner will live longer than an office worker.
What?
Even though they're exposed to a lot more coal dust. Okay?
Is it because they're contributing to global warming?
No, it's because particulate matter doesn't matter. These people get more physical activity, okay?
Okay, but I needed, I needed sort of that kind of an explanation, so that was helpful. Yeah, okay, keep going.
Yeah, the air in these third world places like India, the Philippines, and China, it can be really bad, especially in China. But as ugly as that air is, all the PM2.5, and they have PM2.5 that can be 100 times greater than in the United States.
You can basically see it.
You can see it, right? You can taste it. You can cut through it. There are no actual deaths or illnesses associated with that. Okay, it's ugly air. It should be cleaned up, and it's, you know, unpleasant. But there are no health effects from that. And that is just a fact.
Well, if it was good enough for Olympic athletes, I think it should be good enough for the rest of us.
Well, I mean, you know, and all you have to do is, you know, think back in U.S. history, like, you know, Los Angeles of the 1950s and 1960s here was awful and people complained about it. But, there was no rash of deaths or asthma or health effects. I mean, it's ugly air. You know, should be cleaned up, no question, because it's just aesthetically unpleasing. But it was not a public health problem.
Yeah.
Now, the left wants to tell us that, you know, our air is cleaner than it's been since, the Industrial Revolution. And they won't, but yet they're trying to claim that the air is more dangerous than ever. Even though it's cleaner than ever, it's more dangerous than ever. They're crazy.
Well, yeah, because here's the problem. And this is just a general problem. When you have an advocacy group, If they win, they lose.
Yep. That's right.
So if That's they right. succeed, then they are defunct. It's the same thing with government.
Yeah, no. Bureaucracies tend to expand. They don't, once they've achieved their mission, you know, like the EPA. The EPA has only expanded, and it should have contracted. Most environmental protection is done by states now. You know, in 1970, there weren't very many state EPAs, but now every state has an EPA and a pretty good EPA. Most environmental protection is done in the states. We really don't need a federal EPA, yet the left wants to make the federal EPA bigger than ever.
How do we get rid of the EPA? Like, you just said most of them are good. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, there is environmental protection, I guess, that, you know, people want to enforce, but we don't need a federal EPA. As a matter of fact, yeah, I was on President Trump's transition team for EPA, and President Trump wanted to shrink the EPA. But, of course, it's very difficult because the EPA, you know, Congress gives money to the EPA so the EPA can give money back to their constituents.
Oh, my gosh. That's what it always boils down to. Follow the money.
It always boils down to the money, yeah. And then EPA has lots of power through permits, which Congress, you know, always wants. So, the whole thing is very, very swampy.
Swampy. I like that.
Yeah, President Trump wants to drain the swamp, but, you know, this, oftentimes the swamp, you know, it pushes back very hard.
What can you tell us what he's done thus far?
Well, yeah. So President Trump, first off, the most important thing and why the economy was one of the reasons the economy was booming before, you know, they decided to destroy it because of COVID, was he had stopped the EPA from issuing new regulations.
Yes.
Just, you know, froze everything in place.
Yes. And deregulated.
That's number one. Right. And then I'm going to add, and then he started deregulating and regulating more sensibly and speeding up permit issuances. He's rolled back the Obama war on fossil fuel.
Right.
So that has
we became a net. 13. We became a net exporter of oil.
We are right. We are going to be the world's leading producer of oil and gas, and that has completely changed the geopolitics of the world. You know, fracking has defanged and disempowered, you know, OPEC and Russia.
Is that what like
and Iran?
Is that just because we're no longer dependent on our enemies for our survival?
That's right. It's so big, you know, it's inconvenient if Iran blocks the Straits of Hormuz, but it's no longer a crisis because we have so much oil and gas, you know, we have a glut. And we have so much that...
We have a glut after in the 1970s, 80s.
Peak oil, yeah.
We were told that we were running out of oil.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much of this stuff that in April, the price of oil actually went negative for a brief period.
Yes,
so much.
Which I don't understand. But basically, you have to pay me to buy your gas.
Yeah, because we're just producing so much of it. And what do you do with it? You know, it's...
I don't understand. It's like, you know, it's funny because there are mathematical laws that work in the physical world. And there's actually very little sort of reason that that should work, right? Because there are also mathematical laws that don't apply to the physical world. And so that's one of those, I feel like that's one of those laws where oil went negative. So now what, I get paid to buy oil? Like, how does that work? It's just one of those weird things.
The problem is, here I'm producing this oil. I got to do, you know, it's expensive for me to shut down production. I got to keep producing. So it's actually cheaper for me to pay you to take it than it is for me to shut down production.
It's just amazing. But that's a good place to be.
Absolutely.
It's a good place. So, okay.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, when I was a teenager, I remember the gas lines of the 1970s.
No, I'm very, very young.
I remember when gas was 25 cents a gallon, and then it became 50 cents a gallon, and it became $1 a gallon.
Yes, when it triple digits was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it hit like $4 a gallon under Obama.
Yeah,
thank you very
George
much.
George Bush, yeah, it was very expensive, right. But then fracking happened, and, gas is cheap now.
Yeah.
I almost feel bad for the oil companies.
Almost. I think they'll be okay. They're doing okay. All right. Well, I think that's a good stopping point. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. You want to send people to junkscience.com?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at junkscience.
At junkscience. And my guest, Steve Malloy, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye.
Great. That was fun. I don't know. I'm in a mood today, folks. So bear with me. I'm having like mask anxiety. So I went to a doctor's appointment this morning, and everybody, every patient, well, maybe there were maybe a couple. It was a very busy office, and there were a lot of people. Everybody in the office who worked there had to wear a mask. Everybody who came in, this is Florida, West Palm Beach area. Kevin went to the supermarket yesterday, and everybody was wearing a mask. He said more than 90% of people in this, like he was the outcast one for not wearing a mask. But I'm sitting in the doctor's office, and I'm seeing people. There was a two-year-old. He was no more than three, so he was two and a half, wearing a mask. Wow. That's child abuse. No, absolutely not. Read the science on this stuff. And I see people with these cloth masks that cover all the way up to their lower eyelashes. And I feel suffocated. I don't mean to be dramatic. I'm just saying, like this weird anxiety. It's sort of, in a sense, it's out of my control. It's just this weird sort of flush of anxiety that hits me. And it's not super anxiety. It's just this weird sort of, it's like that visceral reaction when someone vomits, you smell the vomit, you're like, ugh, right? It's sort of like that. It's like an involuntary thing that happens. I'll tell you, I'm struggling with this. I really am. And the light is that I keep meeting people who are like, yeah, I don't buy that. I keep meeting people who are like, no, I'll hug you. When I went inside the office with the healthcare practitioner, I said to her, you may remove the mask if you wish. Like, you have my permission, since it's just the two of us in here, to remove the mask. She said, oh, thank you very much. Took it right off. So then the thing is, are you just conforming? How many of those people are simply conforming because they don't want the mob to come after them? Is that what this is? And I know that they're out there. In fact, my pastor talked about it the other week, and not with any kind of negativity. Just you know, be honest, like fess up, in a sense. Like, we get it. Like, what are you most scared of? Are you scared of COVID, or are you scared of the mob? Because I'll tell you, I'm scared of the government. Because history, that's it. That's the end of that sentence. Because history. All right. I'm not the only one who's scared. This is an exclusive interview. It's up on Daily Caller, and I'm going to play you parts of it. And, you know, somebody was listening to the show the other day and tweeted at me that they needed to see the video of the woman. And I clicked away from it. So I'm going to look for it and see if I can post it. But if you go on YouTube and you look undercover, and now I can't even remember who posted the video. Nurse turned. Let's see. You Google nurse turned investigative reporter. I think you might be able to find it. In fact, maybe I'll do that and see if I can find it for you. Anyway, this is a guy who is living in Seattle, basically very close to one of the entry points into Chaz. He's in Capitol Hill. Like, that's his address. And that's where they set up their autonomous zone. And he's coming out and he says, I'm really scared. And I want to play this for you. But here's, they did something that I think is, well, I don't know. You'll hear the voice, and the voice sounds, because they modified his voice, it sounds like a big burly guy. And I just want to point out, he's wearing a plaid shirt, maybe a baseball cap. They've fuzzed out his face. He doesn't look like the strongest guy on the block. He sounds more like the strongest guy on the block. He does not look like it. So just listen to this.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, first I have to just say that I'm scared. Like, I've been scared every day since Sunday, and I haven't gotten a lot of sleep because for the first time in my life in Capitol Hill, I hear gunshots every single night, and I've heard people screaming every single night outside. And they're not protest screams. I've heard protest screams, but I've also heard screams of terror out there, and I don't know what's happening out there. And it's just, that's rattling enough, just hearing the screams for the first time and not knowing what's going on. It seems like it started on Saturday or Friday. They started saying they wanted to protest against the police down here on Pine Street, 11th and Pine. So the police had been putting up barricades about a block in front of their precinct, the East Precinct, and just holding the line there.
Okay, so now he's going to describe how the police lost their precinct, how they lost their building. And I want to remind you, this is the United States of America. If you wonder who we're fighting against Americans. Listen to this.
And letting the protesters come up and just holding them back. The protesters have been pushing them with umbrellas. So they have been holding umbrellas in the front to conceal their front. They've been holding them on the top so you can't see the top. And you just see this, like, movement screaming and coming at you in your face. And anybody would be terrified. The chance I heard them myself saying, kill the police. I've heard them say, F the police, defund the police. Cops are pigs. Just violent chants. And so they're coming up on the cops, and then they shine like lasers. Sunday night was the worst that I saw it. Sunday night was when they had the lasers and the strobe lights. And I hear the police, the commanding officer, the guy running the situation out here with the megaphone, and he's telling them over and over, please stop. Like, stand where you are. And to give the police credit, they did not budge their own line. They did not.
So we're going to continue, but I want to break in here for just a minute. There was the individual who was shot by police in Atlanta. And he had, if you watch the video, he had actually been quite compliant for like 20 minutes. They had interviewed him and talked to him, and then they finally said that they were going to arrest him. And he fought off two cops, stole one of their tasers, and then ran away. But he fought off both of them, okay? They tussled on the ground. They rolled around on the ground. And then he ran and he turned back. He pointed the taser at them. He fired it once. And then one of the cops took him out. And the cops were summarily fired. And now they're looking into investigating whether this was a targeted murder. And I got to tell you, we have immorality that has swept through our culture, thanks to, in large part, the media, the entertainment media conglomerate, thanks to, in some part, our politicians. But the politicians are basically performing a play written by the people. And so now we have an abject loss of morality. And it's sort of like, well, to each his own. Everybody has their own truth. Just do what makes you feel good. But now we are compounding that with not just a kind of a disregard for police, an actual disdain for police, where we are turning police into the bad guys. Now, what does that mean? It means we no longer will have heroes. The left is very busy destroying heroes. They've done it in Hollywood so that, and not entirely, like not all of Hollywood is on board with this, but you've seen it slowly over since the 1960s. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid were no heroes, but Hollywood turned them into heroes. It's a fantastic movie. Like, okay. And it's sort of the unexpected, which makes it more interesting. Oh, the bad guy as a hero. But when you do that, you're setting yourselves up. And so now we're here. Here we are, where the police are actually the quote unquote bad guys. And how many movies have we seen where the police are the bad guys? Oh, there's one good cop. And then there's a whole, you know, circuit of the bad cops. So in this case, and by the way, all evidence, all real evidence to the contrary, this is the problem that they face. And this is why we will win in the end. I don't want to get you down. I just want to point out what we are up against right now. And frankly, we need more people fighting. We need more people standing up for truth. We just do, because they are controlling the narrative. I don't know if you heard, but Zoom that's monitoring apparently everything. Excuse me. Oh, sorry. I had a sneeze just sneak up on me. Okay. Zoom just I don't know what Zoom calls it, but they deplatformed. They took them off Chinese dissidents. And you would go, well, in China, you know, you can't dissent from the government. And so the dissidents, you know, it says that just seems sort of like, of course, because we have now normalized, in a sense, so it doesn't horrify us that the Chinese government, you know, censors people. We're sort of like mildly, annoyed and amused by that. But now, no, it was here in the United States. It's U.S. soil. That where the Chinese arm reaches, not that that's news, it's been happening. I just, when I saw the Zoom thing, I was like, wow, okay. We're getting into crazy times. And Chaz is just a fantastic example. I got to keep going because I'm not going to get through everything. So he's talking about the confrontation at the police station.
Not move forward. They did not move back. They just stayed still.
That's the protesters.
He's telling them over and over again, please stop. You're shining lasers. You're shining strobes. All of a sudden, someone chucks a glass bottle. It does not hit a police officer. It hit a guardsman in the back in the head. And he says it on the megaphone. Someone just threw a glass bottle at us. Meanwhile, like the crowd's like inching closer and closer, maybe within like 16 inches. He tells him, I'm going to declare this an unlawful assembly. Like, please stop. He tells him, I want to keep this peaceful. You guys say you're peaceful, but why are you advancing? Why are you advancing? Like, they just are on the precinct.
Well, here's the thing. They say, we're peaceful, until they bop you on the head. They're liars. You know, Hitler gave a lot of speeches. He didn't say very much. He talked predominantly about peace before he started war. Okay? When are good people going to learn that the left takes no prisoners? The left is full of lies. I don't want a confrontation, but I'm going to point a gun at you. I'd rather just kill you. That's basically what it boils down to. It would be better if you weren't alive. All right. He goes on talking about some more of the confrontation.
And that was when I understood, like, this was part of their plan, because it was coordinated. People peeled off in specific ways, and they pulled the dumpsters out, and the people are taking cover behind the dumpster. They have book bags. I saw one guy leaning, pulling stuff out of his book bag and throwing it at the police over the top of the dumpster. no idea what that was. You know, but it was a war going on right here. That went on all night long. It seemed like it took hours for it to stop.
He actually pointed out, I'm guessing, his window. It looks like they're maybe in his apartment, and he pointed out his window when he said that. So he's right there. All right. So moving forward, there was a letter from the Seattle police chief, and he read it.
The Seattle Police Guild, which is like their police union, I think, wrote an open letter online. And this was, I read this on Monday, and they said that they've been given instructions to guard the police precinct, but they have no more weapons anymore, and that the only way they can do it is a physical confrontation. And you read this letter, and you can't read this letter and not feel like humanity, because they're begging. They're saying, don't put us in this position. Like, we don't want to beat anyone up, but we're also being told we have to guard the police precinct. And that day, when I read that letter, it tore me up. And I called the governor. I called Governor Inslee. And I listened to a 2-minute audio recording about telling me how to report non-essential businesses like hair salons for being open. And I'm just patiently listening through it. And I get through to a staffer. And I'm like, sir, I'm in Capitol Hill right now. And I've been watching these protesters. They've been throwing stuff at the police. They threw these smoke grenades back at them, or these like canisters. I tell them that the police said they're going to have to leave the precinct tonight. There were tweets from our local Seattle Antifa guy, who he's always tweeting about stuff that's happening here. And all these Seattle people are retweeting it. And he's saying the cops are gone and it's going to be fun, or, you know, something along those lines. And I told him that. And the staffer in Governor Inslee's office, he gave me a customer service voice. And he said he would refer me to previous remarks the governor has made. And I said, well, Governor.
Okay. I just have to break in for just a minute. So when a communist talks to somebody who is not on board, they smile, but not with their eyes. And that's what's happening here. So this guy is complaining. He's calling in and saying, folks, you gotta pay attention here, because there's something going down and it's dangerous and it's not right and we shouldn't be in this position. And what he gets is, that's nice, dear. Listen to this.
Governor made those remarks before what happened last night.
So he's talking about Governor Inslee's remarks, and he's saying back to the staffer, don't refer me to something that happened several days ago. This is happening right now. This is going on right now.
And he said, all I can do is refer you to the remarks. And I said, can I talk to you human to human? What if this was your house and your police station you're looking at? And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, sir, I don't want to make this personal. And I said, this is personal, because this is my home and I don't have cops anymore. And I have people throwing grenades in front of me. And you're telling me to just Google something the governor said a few days ago. Like,
yeah. He breaks down at that point. That's his home. The enemy has moved in to Seattle, and the government of Washington State is fine with sacrificing to that enemy. I find this absolutely astonishing. And the problem is, it should be a warning to us. But I don't know that we are paying attention much. You know, things can move very slowly or they can move very quickly. I'm not sure which way this is going to go. But I know that it's moving in the wrong direction. And then he talks about the reaction of the media, the way that Chaz is being portrayed.
The national media is portraying the situation accurately, because after Monday, when I
just to clarify, he doesn't think that it's being portrayed accurately.
I realized the governor didn't care. I called everyone in city council. No one would answer. I called the mayor. No one would answer. I couldn't leave voicemails, so I started emailing them. No emails back. The voicemail boxes are closed. I just started panicking because I was like, my police station is going to be attacked tonight. And you know what? It was. They took it over and they ransacked it and they started throwing barricades up. And I saw people with guns out here patrolling it that I've never seen before. So when people come in and do a tour of this neighborhood, like it's a music festival, and they look at the snack carts and the street art, and they tell me it's calm, how privileged could you be? Because you're not here with no first responders. You're not here seeing graffiti that says 666 everywhere. You're not here with 50 shops boarded up and gone forever.
50 shops boarded up and gone. And they're probably gone forever. Businesses destroyed, lives destroyed. And people are touring it. And people are laughing about it. He talks about his experience every night, so I thought this was fascinating. What's it like to live in a war zone in the United States?
They're at my front door, at my gates every night, screaming. I hear them. They march up on the street and to the left of me, so I am surrounded. They march on this side. I don't know why. I can't really tell what they're chanting, but it sounds just like drums or kind of a chant. They come up to the gate in front of my building. They were there last night again on the bars screaming. If I want to go to the grocery store, I have to walk through this. If I want to go anywhere, I have to walk through all this. It's completely surrounding me.
I can't imagine. So with COVID, it was sort of a voluntary lockdown. Yes, you had to do it, and it was societal, cultural, like we had to lock down, right? But that's not what this is. He's meeting people who are armed, and there's no rule of law because there's no police. What's funny, and actually there was a kind of a clever meme showing the Antifa guys with their guns, right? Because they've got AK-47s and the like. So showing a photo of them, and they said, we defeated the police, or we got rid of the police so that we could establish our police. Like, you know, it's not that they disagree that there should be a police force. It's that it's not their police force. That's the distinction that I think we have to recognize. And this poor sap, and by the way, I'll just say, like judging from the video, looks like it might be, like he probably spent a lot of money on his apartment. And now his entire, the structure has collapsed. So I'm guessing if he doesn't own it, good for him. But anybody who owns the real estate there, well, good luck to you. Unless they can reestablish the rule of law. And then we have to have a frank discussion about what is the rule of law, because we're not teaching it in our schools. All right. Then he talks about this. This is a new rule of law that they have in Seattle, in the Chaz area. And by the way, tell me just briefly how we will prevent them from expanding their zone, should they choose to do so. This is the new rule of law.
They banned him. He was in there, and a bartender saw him and said, you're not supposed to be here. And they told him he was racist, and they didn't tell him why. So they threw him out, and they called the police on him.
They called the police on him. The police that they've banished, but they called the police. This is what it's coming to.
Understand anymore, because they did call the police on him, and then they took his photos off of social media and sent them to other bars around here, because when we tried to go to another bar, the same thing happened. They already knew about him, and they're like cross banning you for stuff, and no one will even tell you why, other than they don't like you or you're different. But they'll never tell you why. If you ask, what did I say that was racist, they won't tell you. If you ask, what did I do that was wrong, they won't tell you.
So Just so you know, that is the way the Communist Party operates. So I know I keep going back to communism. It's all the same thing. It's not that there are distinctions of evil. Evil is evil, okay? So these are people who are anti-racism, except that they are the greatest racists. Because if you don't agree with them, then you are persona non grata. You're ostracized. You won't be served. But you have to serve everybody. Yeah, except for you. You're a Trump supporter? No. You're straight? Now that's no, you can't be straight. You can't be, I don't know. Like, they'll just come up with something. Because it's never ending. All right, so finally, he comments on what the mayor herself had said. And I want to play this for you because, you know, she came out and said, well, it's the summer of love. There's nothing wrong with this. We just decided to cede part of Seattle to lawlessness. Hey, you guys elected her. See, this is my problem. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But listen to what this guy says.
Because my mayor, Mayor Durkan, was on TV last night, and she called this the summer of love. At the same exact time, our police chief, Carmen Best, did a press conference saying it was taking them an hour to respond to 911 calls for rape. Rape and robbery, 1 hour, we've never had that before. It will never go back to normal. This isn't.
Honestly, for the police chief to say that, it almost sounds like an invitation. And I don't know the police chief, so I'm not making any kind of judgment on the police chief. And frankly, you need to let people know. But at the same time that you're letting people know, you're letting all the criminals know. You got an hour. Set your clocks. We'll be there in an hour. Go have at it, whatever you want. We'll be there in an... That's frightening. This guy is hearing that and going, oh my gosh, I wish I had bought myself a gun. Because he voted these people into office.
It's not civil unrest. This is some kind of anarchist homegrown movement. And they get bold. And when the mayor tells them it's just a summer of love, why would it ever be different?
When the mayor comes out, like the mayor of Baltimore, when we had all the riots, the riots after Ferguson in Baltimore, and she said, I can't remember exactly, but basically decided to give them the space they needed to destroy. Something along those lines. Then you are, and that is the, that look, that's just plain leftism. Destruction, good. Capitalism, evil. Creation, evil. Why? Well, what is creation? Creation is order out of chaos. Otherwise known as God. Oh, they hate God. It's really that simple. And, you can just approach it. I'm a firm believer. I'm a Christian, obviously. I make no bones about it. But I'll also talk to you on just the metaphysical aspect of it. So I call it God. You can call it the force in the universe or Mother Nature or whatever you want to call it. It's the good versus evil. They prefer evil. Really. Evil destroys. Good creates. And they're very good at what they do. So, former Vice President Joe Biden released a plan Monday for reducing systemic racial disparities for African Americans in his campaign for president because he needs the black vote. Race-neutral policies are not a sufficient response to race-based disparities. We need anti-racism policies, which by and large would be racist because that's what they are. They differentiate people in. But here's the thing. So, and I think I had a guest talking about this. There are two definitions of racism. There's the conservative definition of racism, and there's the liberal definition of racism. And so we have what we have here is a failure to communicate, is what we're saying. But he went on to say, he tweeted this, we need to tackle systemic racism head on and ensure everyone has a fair shot at the American dream. So I think, I can't remember who tweeted this, but Joe Biden's been in public office since 1976. Can anybody name anything he did? Can anybody name an accomplishment that Joe Biden has? And my son said, yeah, he voted for segregation. Sure. And he voted against prison reform. He doesn't have a very good record. Why Obama chose him, I think because maybe he's so dumb that he wouldn't get in the way or something. Obama chose him. Anyway, the plan addresses economic disparities and small bit. Now, mind you, if it addresses economic disparities, that means that it is outcome based. The moment it's outcome based, it's racist. All right. Let's not talk about that. Oh, this is the other audio I wanted you to hear. So this was posted on Facebook by the Citizens Mandate under Powerful. This is the one video every American needs to see. This is a Seattle street preacher. And it's raining, of course, because it always rains in Seattle, I've noticed. She's black. She's standing with a black person. They're both wearing red plastic ponchos. And they are standing opposite at least a white girl. And it looks like people who are not terribly more diverse than the white chick with the blonde hair. And of course, I'm making all kinds of superficial distinctions for the benefit of radio. Listen to this.
I would be.
Stop.
I would be in the same position. So I'm not even mad at you, baby.
I'm feeling like any news because
it's fake news. This is the thing. I know people don't like Trump. I understand that. But let me tell you something. If I had to pick between him and Joe Biden, I'm not voting for Joe Biden. You want to see a bunch of black people go to jail by the next 4 years? Put Joe Biden in. Watch what happens. You want to see black men get killed substantially? Like you've never seen before, put Joe Biden in and watch what happens. These Democrats, and I'm sorry to say this, I'm not trying to be racist, but they hate black people. These are the same people that fought to keep slavery in.
I love the way she says that. I don't mean to be racist, but they hate black people. How does that make you a racist? But very clever. She just takes them to task. She said they fought to keep slavery in. Listen to this.
Trying to be racist, but they hate black people. These are the same people who have fought to keep slavery in. These are the same people who built the KKK. These are the same people who hated us from the beginning. The Republican Party is the party of the blacks. Blacks, the Republican Party is the only party that the black people actually assisted in finding. But all of that history has been torn away. People say, oh, there was this big switch. There was never a big switch. The union won because we had grown in the industrial era. So we were able to get trains and get supplies back to our soldiers while the Confederate was still riding horses. They were not able to get supplies back fast enough, right? So what happened was once slavery was abolished in the South, the people in the South could no longer make their money from slaves. They had to move to the North to work in the industry to produce. And so the people in the North that already had established themselves in the industry moved to the South. And so that's where it was a transfer of people coming from the South to the North and people coming from the North to the South. There was never a big switch. So the same Democrats who hated black people from the beginning are the same ones who hate us now. And they use our cause. How did Black Lives Matter turn into something about LGBTQ? When blacks really don't support that. We're conservative about that. We're really not about that. Not only that, we don't support abortion. We're about workers. This is the black culture. We ain't ever been about that. Not only that, we're not about feminism.
No, we're not.
Black women marry their husbands and respect their husbands. That's what we're on. We're not on this, I do what I want. We don't do that. That's not our community, and you would understand. I know you understand what I'm saying. We don't do that. But yet these people are hijacking our movement and the Democratic Party. They're trying to hijack our stuff. No.
So there you go. I love how, so the person standing next to her, also a black person standing next to her while she's just going off on the Democrat Party, finally starts to sort of pipe in a la Diamond and Silk, right? And it's just fantastic to see people who have studied history and are not afraid to go out and try to educate other people. Folks, it's in the exchange of ideas that we grow as a culture, as a society, as individuals. I have a friend who started posting, "Be brave, venture out." I love that. Be brave, venture out. Let's have a call to bravery, shall we? This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Thank you so much for listening. God bless you. Now go. Have a great rest of your day.